What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Yes, 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 we're back. It's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and our guest this evening is all the way from New Jersey. Her name is Shanta Blue. She is an author, speaker, and certified sex therapist. She specializes in working with women of color and folks in romantic relationships who are interested in improving their self-esteem, experiencing sexual difficulties, premarital counseling, and exploring BDSM, kink, and consensual non-monogamous lifestyles, love styles. Her passion lies in aiding women in reducing shame related to their sexuality and finding pleasure in not only their sex lives, but their lives as a whole. She is the co-founder and director of therapeutic services at Blue Counseling and Wellness Center, a nutrition and health wellness center aimed at empowering, educating, supporting, and guiding those who are looking to transform their lives. Shanta is an internationally known speaker and is the author of Colored Girls Who Need a Break When Being a Superwoman is Just Too Much. Shanta Blue, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Like, I always look for dynamic people who are doing interesting things in the community. And, you know, even though we're based here in Montreal, we still want to get, you know, that international community so that we kind of make our black community a little bit smaller so that, you know, you never know who might be listening and who might be like, you know what? It's 2022. I can take counseling all the way in New Jersey. It's okay. We'll do it Zoom wise and stuff like that. And I'm sure you know, with the advent of COVID-19, you've had to modify the way that you provide your services.
Definitely. There still are some restrictions in that, like in terms of like therapy services.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely have been working with a large range of people from all over during these COVID times.
Yeah. So speaking of COVID times, like how have you personally been? Like, how has this feels like we might be going into 3 years. People are talking about 2025 as like the end of it. I'm hoping that March, it'll just be like, whoop, we're done.
Right. You know, disappearing, but dissipating into the air.
Yeah. Becoming just a regular old flu that we can all just take two pills and just, you know, rest. How has that been? Because one of the things that I've noticed just in general is that folks have become very, very aware of their mental health. There has been an uptick of domestic violence across the board because people are isolated together. And so, you know, instead of having at least 8 to 10, maybe 12 hours outside of the home where you know, they can decompress or vent or at least be away from whatever kind of problematic situation they find themselves in, now it's almost 24/7. So like first question first, how did it impact you in the beginning?
Right. The pandemic had a lot of high and lows, right? Like we were having some fun in the beginning of 2020 and then all of a sudden everything was shut down. So personally, like it was more about protecting my family because I have older parents, and my grandmother, people like that. I was like, I ain't going nowhere. I was staying in the house. So it was a bit lonely. It was a bit frustrating at times because there's certain things you want to do and say, and like you weren't able to do all of that. So at first it was a little jarring. And then as it, you know, picked up, you get used to it. You learn to adapt because that's what we as humans do. We adapt to difficult situations whenever we need to. That's, you know, survival. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it was fun in some elements because I did get to rest, but exhausting in other elements. So
indeed. And how did this affect your business?
Right. So the business actually grew significantly during this difficult time. Because like you
That's
said,
what I thought.
People were, right. People were prioritizing their mental health, especially Black people. After the George Floyd incident, we saw huge increases in Black and brown folks going to therapy. And, you know, my practice was no different from that trend in that everybody wanted to sit and talk about what was happening in this country, as well as realizing that there's some shit in their lives that they haven't dealt with before.
Yeah.
Like, and it's coming to, you know, the forefront because we are in isolation. We had nothing but time to think and talk to the people that we love in our lives. So yeah, it was great for business. I feel bad for people having to go through these things. And I'm glad my business was there to help support them and serve them during this difficult time.
Yeah. I've never asked this question before. And like while you were speaking, you know, you were saying that Black folks realized, especially after the George Floyd incident, the murder of George Floyd, that, you know, they needed to fix some stuff. And how does being Black, especially in North America, because it's different everywhere. Like in Africa, that's they have their own set of ways of orienting themselves when it comes to the Black folks, the darker skinned folks there. But over here, we have a particular history that stems with, I'm not going to say slavery, with enslavement, the enslavement of millions of people. How does Blackness and mental health correlate? Like,
oh, goodness. It absolutely is connected 100%, and especially in this country, right? And, you know, the North America, where there was high levels of slavery, that generational trauma has stayed with us through the years. Like the Atlantic slave trade really took a toll longer and way past, you know, when our ancestors were being beat thrown off, you know, ships when they were enslaved for decades.
Centuries, like, yeah.
Right, centuries, right? So all of that is ingrained in our DNA. We still carry that with us. And a lot of folks are starting to heal those generational wounds that have happened, so it doesn't continue to be perpetuated in their, you know, children. But there's still a lot of work that we have to do, and it's not going to happen with, you know, healing ourselves individually. It's going to have to be a collective healing, system restructuring, right? Because the systems that are at place were served to keep us suppressed. And so until those systems are completely dismantled and rebuilt in a more inclusive way, then it's going to be a long time before we fully heal and can move past, and not to trivialize it, but be able to continue thriving and growing past the trauma that we, you know, had to endure for centuries.
Yeah. And why do you think that folks are now beginning, because, you know, the generation before us, our parents, you know, and I believe that even before our parents, they just kind of like, all right, they just shrug off whatever their quote unquote mental, when you talk about mental health to people, you know, I just feel like the older folks are just like, what are you talking about? They feel like y'all a bunch of wusses. Like, we had it worse. We had it like this level. So what is it about this time period now that people are like, no, I need to focus on what's going on in my mind?
We are realizing we have nothing else to lose, right? They're already killing us in mass numbers, you know, where it doesn't even need to be like that. It's kind of like, well, I need to at least find some peace while I'm still on this planet, while I'm still on this earth. I need to find peace somewhere, because whether, you know, I do the right thing and be that good old boy, good old girl, the way the system wants us to be, or I radicalize and really, you know, push the Black agenda forward to help, you know, our population thrive in that way, either way, they're going to try to kill me. Either way, they're going to keep me down. So I might as well take care of myself, do the things that bring me joy and bring me happiness now. Because, you know, life isn't promised.
Right. And how do you tie in, because you say that your work is focused on working with women of color and folks of color. How do you tie, like, the mental health with sexual health? Because how do the two relate?
The two relate because, you know, our mental health literally impacts everything that we do, how we show up to work every day, how we engage with our families and our children, how we form romantic or sexual relationships. So when we start to unpack that, we start to recognize that there are some limiting beliefs that have been happening, or these negative messages surrounding our bodies and our sexual health and our sexual well-being that stems a lot of times when we were younger, or, you know, based off of our religious principles, or, you know, things that we experienced that were negative, that has, you know, for a lot of people, that has stayed with them through adulthood, and now they're finding difficulties in their romantic relationships. They might have some difficulties related to just like the physical performance, right? So getting aroused to a certain level, maintaining that arousal when they want to maintain that arousal. So a lot of different things. So we do unpack a lot of these negative messages. And then the piece of sexuality education is added to that, so they know accurate and comprehensive, like, factual information about, you know, what sex is, what it looks like, and then their sexuality as a whole. So, you know, I work with a lot of folks who are learning how to express their sexuality, whether that be just through their sexual identity, through their gender, or through, like, physical sexual acts that they want to begin to explore, and love styles that they want to begin to explore.
So when you say unpack, Okay. This is a term that is used a lot now, like when you're following mental health professionals, they talk about unpacking this and unpacking that. But what does that really mean to someone who, let's say someone who's never gone to therapy, doesn't follow any mental health specialist, what does this mean for them?
So think of it like a suitcase, right? When you just came back from vacation, you have all your like dirty clothes in the suitcase, and you need to unpack it. You need to, put it in the, laundry, and then from the laundry, you put it in the washing machine. You put it in the washing machine to the dryer, and then to the dryer, you have to fold it and put it up. So it's a process of, not just like, oh, I'm going to dump this suitcase out on the floor once I come in from my vacation. It's no, I have to maintain some type of order. I have to get all this out, get all the unnecessary junk and filth and dirt out so that I can be able to go back out there, wear this outfit again, take it on another vacation, be able to put it in my closet. Like, there's so many different levels. So when we're unpacking things in therapy, it's taking it piece by piece. Okay, this impacted you. You wore this day. How did you feel during that time? What was influencing your decision making, your behaviors? How did it feel to interact with this other person and what they chose to do and say to you? And so we take situations, experiences, piece by piece, and talk about what happened surrounding that and how it emotionally impacted them. So we can see, okay, is this something that has traumatized you in some way, whether it's a big trauma or a little trauma? Or is this something that, you've kind of dealt with that, you've talked about it for a good amount of time, and now, like, we can move on to something else that might be a little bit more pressing. So, yeah, all that to say, unpacking is huge in the therapeutic process, and it's really just about talking, getting it out there, so you can start seeing the different patterns and seeing, how this has made you into the person that you are.
The impact that it's had on your life and how you've developed since.
Right, exactly.
I kind of love the analogy of the suitcase, right? Because especially Caribbean folks, and I'm pretty sure that other folks, we have this expression of don't air your dirty laundry. But you're kind of saying, no, you gotta take your dirty laundry out. You need to air it out and then go clean it. So like,
Right.
how do you reconcile the two? Because and I think not airing the dirty laundry has a lot to do with how people perceive going and talking about like their mental health issues. It's like, oh, I'm telling all my family's deep dark secrets, or I'm telling my personal deep dark secrets. Like, why is it a, why should someone like let go of that kind of airing of the dirty laundry and like let it go? What's the impact of that
Southern
on
African
someone?
Americans definitely have that same mentality of like, don't air your dirty laundry. What happens in the South stays in the house. Don't be telling people our business, all that good stuff. And so letting that go can be freeing. It can free you up to embrace other things in your life. It can free you up to have the lifestyle that you actually want to live and that you're happy with, right? And everybody has dirty laundry, right? Like, just because you don't put it out there, you don't air it, doesn't mean it's not happening and it's causing more harm than good by keeping it in the family, right? Because, we see instances where, young children have been molested by, or raped by an older family member, and they, have disclosed that this has happened. They have kept it out of like people talking about it. It stayed within a small group of people in the family. And then this child is growing up and then still having to interact with their perpetrator, interact with someone who harms them in this way. And that is then causing even more stress and drama. And then you think about maybe if they had a sibling who, witnessed this in some way, and now that's impacting that sibling. And so it's causing all this drama, all this chaos within the family, but nobody wants to talk about it. and that also leads to like physical ailments. Like people develop so many chronic illnesses from holding on to these family secrets, from, you know, not being able to talk about it. So everybody has this dirty laundry. We know it's out there. Like everybody's yes is going to be different, but you still need to air it out so you can clean it, so you can put it up, you can figure out how to, you know, maybe not create as much dirty laundry going forward.
Right, right. There's so much I want to ask you, but we do have to take a little break. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Shanta Blue, who is an author, speaker, and certified sex therapist from New Jersey. We do have to take a little break and get back to you. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Friends who are really not on our side, they've always got something to say about us and how we are spending our days. They're trying to confuse us with their lies and deceit, but they don't really care if we live or die on these streets. But you and I, we both know the truth, then we will prevail as long as God sees us through.
No matter what they do, you need to love me. I ain't out there cheating on you, you need to trust me. Wanna see you happy, never do you.
Can't tell where mine is. Brown skin up against my brown skin. Need some every now and then. No, yeah. Where are your people from? Maybe Mississippi or Nylon. Apparently your skin has been kissed by the sun. You make me want a Hershey's kiss, your licorice. Every time I see your lips, it makes me think of honey-coated chocolate. Your kisses are worth more than gold to me. I'll be your almond joy, you'll be my sugar daddy. Brown skin, you know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins. I can't tell where mine is. Brown skin up against my brown skin. Need some every now and then. Something magnetic pulls me and I can't get out. Disoriented, I can't tell my up from down. All I know is that I wanna lay you down. Every time I lay you in.
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. They will be destroyed in September 2027 unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll-free 1-877-635-2648 or go to myrecordsmychoice.ca.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is the co-founder and director of therapeutic services at Blue Counseling and Wellness Center, a nutrition and mental health wellness center aimed at empowering, educating, supporting, and guiding those who are looking to transform their lives. She is Shanta Blue. Shanta, thank you so much for being here. The conversation before the break, we were talking a lot about unpacking trauma, the fact that now folks on a whole, but especially Black folks, are more open to getting help, to dealing with the traumas, deep-rooted trauma, such as dealing with racism, the impact of having family that was enslaved, to like things that are happening in their present day lives, whereby, you know, they may be abused by a spouse or a family member when they were a child or something like that. But I do want to talk more about that, definitely. But I want to talk about you, because one of the things that I've noticed, especially I do have my own therapist, and I did realize that I needed to seek mental health. This was before the pandemic. And I noticed something when I was looking, is there is a lack of Black and BIPOC therapists. And so I wanted to ask you, what made you decide that this is a field that you're going to get into?
So I always grew up wanting to be in some type of service profession. My dad was a longtime public educator. He's a teacher in one of the nearby towns, but he retired after 35 years. My mom also worked in service. She worked at a bank for a long time and then worked at a college. So like that was ingrained in me, was to give back to my community, give back to other folks to help them kind of level up their lives in some way, or just, you know, get the basic needs that they had met. So originally I wanted to be a pediatrician, and I realized I didn't like science. Like, I was good at science, but it wasn't happening for me. I thought 3 years of med school and then residency, it was too much. And then so I took a psych course when I was in high school, and I fell in love. It was, you know, everything that I wanted to be able to do and to be able to explore. So when I went to undergrad, I majored in psychology, and then shifted to social work for my master's degree. Right? Okay. So I got my licensed clinical social work degree, and it was what I wanted. Like, it was being able to, you know, talk to people, talk to, originally it was young folks, to help them kind of, like, get ahead of some of those traumas that they may have experienced when they were younger, and be able to support themselves emotionally and cope emotionally as they got older. And so I worked at a high school for about 10 years providing mental health services. And in that time, you know, I was asked to facilitate a sexuality education course for the high school students.
Okay.
That's where I felt like really fell in love. I was like, what? I get to talk about sex all day and like help with like mental health issues and making sure people had services that they needed. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm sold. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I also didn't know this was a real career. Like, I had no idea sex therapy was the actual thing.
Right.
And because there was no one who looked like me, who I visibly saw. I knew of Dr. Ruth, and I knew of this woman called Sue Johansson, who was like on this late night show, who did like sex talk with Dr. Sue or something like that.
Okay.
And I would watch that. I'm like, literally, two only people I've ever known to be like sexuality professionals. They were older white women that had accents. Like, I couldn't relate. I just loved the content.
Right.
Like, so I was like, okay, like grandma's getting it, you know, talking about sex. I loved it. But like, I didn't see me. And even, you know, social workers, when I started my own therapy back when I was in undergrad, like, I was lucky enough, I went to an all women's college. So the people there looked like me. I was open to that. I recognized that, hey, there are Black psychologists, Black therapists out there. But once I got out of my little bubble,
right,
there wasn't, like, I went, came back to Jersey, and there were no Black therapists that I could reach out to, and I know I still wanted to receive ongoing therapy, so it took a lot, and I was like, I need to be able to be a part of this small, very small group that is providing mental health services, and hopefully, at some point, I want to continue to give back and, like, mentor a lot of other young people who want to go this route as well, because we need it. Like, I think last time I checked the statistics for social workers, there's only 1% of clinical social workers who went on to get their clinical degree to be able to practice independently. Mm-hmm. Only 1% in all of social workers. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense. So I try my best to give back and support the next generation coming up.
So because not everybody necessarily knows, we hear a lot, like, the term social worker. What does that actually mean? What does that actually entail? Because, like, in certain spheres, a social worker can be seen as, like, someone who's bad, who's going to come and take away your kids and, like, disrupt the family and all that stuff. And I feel like a part of what pushes that particular narrative has been movies and television, where they're talking about, like, a family that's in, like, a traumatic situation, and the social worker comes in and steals the kids away from the parents because the parents aren't making money, or they're working, like, 5 jobs, so they're never home, and the kids are home alone, that type of situation. But that feels like an oversimplification of what a social worker is. So could you just tell us what is a social worker, and what do y'all do? What do they do?
So social workers are vast. We are in so many different areas of life. It is not just, the social workers that work for Child Protective Services or that work for your food support, right? So if you can't think, welfare social workers, can't think of it. Mm-hmm. So it's not just that, right? Social workers are typically people who are looking at these different social systems within your life. So we're looking at the fuller picture, make sure that you have all of your needs met, right? So we cannot focus on things like pleasure and joy, if we don't have any food in our fridge, right? If we don't have housing, over our heads, like, we have to get these basic needs met. And social workers, are looking at all of these different systems in play. We're looking at, like, their possible connection to education. We're looking at their religious institutions that play a role. We're looking at thinking about, like, the oppressive systems that are in place in the country. Like, we're looking at all these different systems to make sure their needs are met in each one, so we can help them thrive and, as they quote, be productive members of society, essentially, that's what we do, and it looks very different depending on, that particular social worker's interest. There are people who are caseworkers, and so they're working hand in hand with folks to get them those basic service needs, or to help them with particular situations. Like, there's social worker, oncology social workers who work with folks who have some form of cancer, and so making sure they schedule their doctor's appointment, and making sure, like, they have, like, a home health aide, like, they do that, one-to-one work to set up these needs. One of my favorite professors is a sports social worker.
Okay.
So he works with different professional, athletic teams to support the players, to kind of see, like, what can help them be able to focus more on their career, on the task that they need to do. So there's so many different elements that you can get into social work. It's not just this, bad person coming to take away your kids type of situations. It can really be people in your lives to just help you and sit with you and support you. And then there's the clinical social workers like myself who, do that one-to-one mental health work that, you know, can help you if you have some type of mental health diagnosis, help you learn how to cope with that.
That is so interesting. I'm glad that you kind of started to unveil that, because whenever I was in high school, then I went to theater school, then I went to college here in Canada, and mm-hmm. I'd always hear, like, all the black kids that I was around. I was like good 3 years above them. They always like, oh, I'm going into social, I'm in social, they're studying social. And I was like, why y'all studying social? Like, because it sounded so narrowing, it sounded so mm-hmm. limiting. It's like, just studying social and you want to do social work. And I'm just like, I always thought, my head went to those kids being taken away from their parents. And now, right. Now you're telling me that, like, social work is just like an umbrella, and mm-hmm. it's a huge umbrella that can actually is very multifaceted and can lead to right. other careers as well. So you were working as a social worker at a school, and they asked mm-hmm. they asked you to do a seminar on sex and sexuality. Can mm-hmm. I call it that? And boom, you felt like this is your place. So right. how do you go about orienting yourself around sex and sexuality? Originally you were more into mental health and helping students and helping youth, and now it's like, ooh, there's a whole new door that's opened up and you're about to right. walk through it. So how did you make that decision? What did that look like for you?
So a piece of it was very personal as well. So going through the training program to become a facilitator for this, you know, seminar, I was able to unpack some of my own messages that I had around sexuality. I realized that there were certain desires that I had, certain love styles and lifestyles that I was, you know, curious about, that I was too shameful to even explore, right? Mm-hmm. I had so much shame about my own sexuality that, like, I was hiding it. I was keeping it from really being able to be out there and proud and just excited about, you know, all the different possibilities. Mm-hmm. And so I also recognized, and, you know, unpacking all of that for myself, I also recognized that there are a lot of women that I know who are experiencing the exact same thing that I was experiencing, whether it was, you know, body image issues that, you know, made them feel shameful, or if it was religious institutions that they grew up on, that they loved and supported, but, like, their desires was completely different from what they were being taught in their, you know, religious institution. They had that kind of dissonance happening, and it's like, wow, like, there's so many of us out there. I really want to be able to help people in the way that I was able to be helped, to unpack my own stuff. So that's what I started doing. That's how I began to explore. And I'm a big geek. I also am, like, a little bit of a perfectionist, type A type person as well. So education was the route for me. Like, there is no, at least in New Jersey, there is no regulations for a sex therapist. The only thing is, you just, you know, you specialize in it. So you could just read a whole bunch of books and say you're going to specialize in sex therapy, or mm-hmm. take one to two classes and say you're going to specialize in it. But I didn't want to go that route. I wanted to be ethical in my practice and make sure I learned as much as I possibly could to be able to go down this specialty. So I did go back to school. I got a second master's degree in human sexuality education. And so that allowed me to submit for my certification as a sex therapist through ASEX. And that's how I, you know, started doing the work. Like, literally, as soon as I graduated, I opened up my practice and started seeing clients. So I was ready to hit the ground running, because I knew that this was a service that needed to be provided. And especially throughout New Jersey, like, I am the only Black female certified sex therapist that I know of in the state of New Jersey. I know I have a male colleague who's, like, in South Jersey, and a couple other people who specialize in it, but I'm the only one who's certified in my area. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And, I'm just absorbing the information. I'm like, okay, yeah, all right, cool. A lot of mercy. You said there's a lot of shame regarding religion and and folks' sexuality, folks that you were talking to, especially women you were talking to who are ashamed of who they were. How, I want to kind of tie it back to blackness, because I always find that whenever it comes to black folks, we're always seen as larger than life. We're always seen as more monstrous. We're always seen as more lustful. We're always seen as like, I mean, if I think back to cinema, the first movie that the first like really big movie, The Birth of a Nation, that was made, you know, it talked about the black man and his, how he's lustful for the white woman and all of that. And this is part of the narrative up till now. It's like we're always seen as these predators. How does that impact sexuality, and how does that impact us today? I mean,
ooh, honey, yeah. Oh yeah, that, like, that in itself could be a whole show, a series of shows. Like, oh goodness, it humongously impacts us, right? Mm-hmm. So especially when we were enslaved people, they believed that we were these over-sexualized beings just because, you know, our genitalia was a little bit larger, sometimes a lot larger than, you know, theirs. And so they were saying that, you know, that's wrong. Like, they're, because they have such enlarged genitalia, then they must, you know, enjoy sex more. And they were just projecting all of these things onto
all of
us,
their insecurities.
Right, all of their insecurities. And then on another level, they then had to villainize it, right? Because they were so lustful and wanted sex, that women were, you know, were supposed to be raped, right? They had, you know, because they wanted sex, they seduced me. So now I just had to give into their loins. And, you know, then we have the men who, because, you know, the white slave owner's wife was, you know, wanting to flirt with them and touch them and things like that, and they forced themselves onto these black men and then flipped it around and said, oh, he touched me inappropriately, he looked at me inappropriately, he raped me, when that wasn't the case at all, right? So that stays with us. We have different stereotypes, we have different tropes that we see in the media and, you know, and stories and things like that, that all play a role in how we view ourselves and how we view our sexuality, right? So, like, you have the black man dingo who's like big and, you know, has this super long to the floor penis. You have the Jezebel, you know, the black Jezebel who is going to take your husband away from you. Like, and then on the flip side, you have the mammy, right? You have the mammy who is completely desexualized, has no sexual desire whatsoever, is often large and voluptuous. Like, and then you have, what is it, the kind of the Uncle Tom trope of, like, you know, you're just gonna cater to whatever masses needs. And, like, so there's all these different extremes. There's definitely more, you know, kind of wrapped in that as well, but we have these extremes. And so especially with religious institutions and the respectability politics, it's all done to try to avoid for the larger society from seeing us in those different lights. They don't want you to be the Jezebel. They don't want you to be the Mandingo. They want you to be the more docile, because that is what is going to save our race. That's what's going to keep you alive. That's
what's more palatable.
You know, is more palatable, right? So you're pandering to what the white people want you to look like.
Just in case you're tuning in for the very first time, we are speaking to Shanta Blue. She is an author, speaker, and certified sex therapist from New Jersey. We do have to take a quick little break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Oh, tell me where the women at. keep on messing, keep on guessing, knows who they are, not afraid, and that's a fact. And yes, I said it, conceal what they're dressing, and whenever I feel it, it will be a blessing. Ain't personal, it's not you, doesn't need you to tell her what to do.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is an internationally known speaker and author of For Colored Girls Who Need a Break When Being a Superwoman is Just Too Much. She's also a certified sex therapist from New Jersey, and her name is Shanta Blue. Shanta, thank you so much. The conversation is very rich, very expensive, and I'm enjoying it.
We've covered a lot.
I mean, like, you're definitely right that a lot of the topics that we've been talking about since before the break, before both breaks, are you know, we can have shows upon shows upon shows of them. But I think that the information that you're sharing is really, is really going to make an impact. And there's a question that I wanted to ask you from before the first break. You had mentioned big trauma and little trauma when we were talking about unpacking, and airing our dirty laundry and cleaning the laundry and, you know, going through that whole process of, so we can continue using it again and again. You did mention about big trauma and little trauma. And how do you determine when something is a big trauma and something is a little trauma? What, because, you know, the intuitively or basically, people think trauma is trauma. You know, it's traumatic. So, you know, it is what it is, and we have to deal with it. But what makes the difference between something that's big and little?
So there is actually a full, like, diagnostic criteria that we consider to be what might be a big trauma, right? That's typically what we'll have in what we use to diagnose mental health concerns. It's called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. And so they have a full list of criteria that, you know, a lot of times that big trauma is going to be some major incidences in your life, whether, like, you witnessed a murder or a family member dying in front of your eyes, if you were raped or sexually molested. It's typically, you know, traumas that have, experiences that have directly impacted you in some large or significant way, whether physically or mentally, emotionally, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when folks go off to war and have to, you know, witness the dying and the despair and destitute that is sometimes attached to that, that could be seen as more of a bigger traumatic experience. And once again, there are a whole list of criteria that, you know, it needs to be met. When we talk about little traumas or little T's, it's more that it may be, like, more vicarious. So it may not have happened directly to you, but you heard about it in some way. It happened to someone who was really close to you. And so it has impacted you a little bit. It could be, you know, more verbal situations where, you know, people have said certain things or made different comments to you about, like, who you are and what you do and things like that, that have influenced now how you behave and how you show up in the world. So it's not as physically or directly physically or emotionally, you know, impactful in that, like, harming you, but it still influences you on certain levels.
Oftentimes, and I've had conversation with people about that, you know, like, and even in our community, especially when we're dealing with older folks, you know, when you go to someone and you go to them in confidence and you say, hey, I'm going through this thing, whatever it is, and they're like, oh no, well, this other person that I know went through this, and that was much bigger, and they got through it, so what you're going through is nothing, you know. So basically, that's, I think it comes back around to, like, how is something a little trauma? Is it a comparison? Is it like, okay, this is what I've been through and this is what someone else has been through? Or is it like your own, like, this is like, I'm not even sure how I'm oriented the question. How do you determine within yourself? Is it us versus them thing? Because I've had people compare themselves and be like, oh, you know, my friend from Rwanda, she lived through the massacre of 1996. What I went through is nothing in comparison to that. I have no right to seek mental health because I haven't been through what she's been through type of deal.
Right. It's definitely not an us versus them type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm huge on your perspective is your reality. So what you have experienced for yourself, only you can tell us how it has impacted you. Nobody else can tell you that. Like nobody else can say how big or how little it is. It's more about, you know, how is that now, you know, influencing my mental well-being, my physical well-being, my spiritual well-being, all, you know, all these different elements. How has that now changed me in some way or not changed me, right? So it's not necessarily about in comparison to something else outside of you, compare it to like someone else's experiences. It's more about how this experience made you feel, how this, you know, experience is now, is it impacting your sleeping habits? Is it impacting your eating habits? Like things like that. So you're looking more inwardly to see like, what this has done, what perspective you were taking on this, right?
Have you found in your career that people are in denial about what they? I see you start nodding before you finish. Like, yeah, yeah. So how do you deal with someone who's in denial?
That is, yeah, a big one. It's difficult when someone is in denial about a certain situation. It means that they don't want to actually see the truth or at least accept, you know, what it is that they are experiencing. It's just like, nope, this isn't happening. I'm not dealing with that. This is what's actually happening. Like, I'm not, like, I can't. I don't have the capacity to do that in somewhere. And that's a defense mechanism. It's
right.
Something we use to keep our own mental health, our own ego safe. Like, yeah. We need to protect ourselves at all times. So if we deny something is happening, then, you know, it's not going to harm us in the way that it possibly has harmed us in the past or in a way that we know that it can harm us, right? So when we're in denial about things, it is about doing some reality testing. It, you know, is about also making sure there might be another more healthy, more mature coping mechanism in place to help us confront whatever it is that we are trying to be in denial about.
Mm-hmm. And how do you approach someone who's in denial? Like, how do you, okay, they've decided that they want to get mental health and you're trying to work with them. And the only way that you can work is if, you know, they acknowledge what they're going through. And I'm so thankful for my mental health specialist because if ever I start being in denial about something, she's like, she puts a finger on it and is like, you know, we gotta deal with this, you know? Mm-hmm. But how do you identify it? And then how do you kind of like, in, I don't know, I want to say gently, but sometimes gently is not, mm-hmm. is not necessarily mm-hmm. is a technique to use, but what do you do to get someone to face it over however many sessions you have to do that?
I don't know if this is like a real statistic, but I firmly believe that therapy is about 90% the relationship that you have with your therapist and 10% about like the interventions and the, you know, evidence-based techniques to help that actual client, right?
Right.
That relationship is key. So first building that connection with the client, so there is a level of trust that this client now feels safe with you to be vulnerable, right? And expose, you know, some of their deepest, darkest secrets that they've been holding on to for so long. So without that relationship between the client and the therapist, like nothing's going to come out. No matter what you say, they're going to block it. They're going to be resistant. They're gonna be like, we're not talking about this. Like they're going to be very surface level with you, right? And so building that dynamic is going to be key. And once that's there, similar to your therapist, you like put it, you know, put her finger on it for you. You know, start to notice certain patterns for your client. You start to notice when they might be hiding something and when they are being very upfront and honest about everything that they're sharing with you. And so when you can start to recognize some of that, you can call them out. Like, you can bring it to the forefront. Like, hey, I noticed this. Tell me more about this. Yeah. Right? And hopefully they have built that trust with you so they feel comfortable. I mean, therapy isn't always comfortable, but they feel like they can trust you with, you know, their securities, their insecurities, their ego, to be able to say, like, okay, we could talk about this because I know you got me. I know you're going to help me out in some way and help me, you know, cope with whatever we just unpacked.
Yeah, there's some safety in the discomfort that I'm feeling. Right. There's some safety in this space. And I remember even when I, because I prefer being in person with my therapist, but we had to wear masks. And even with my mask on, she would read my body language. She would say something and then I would involuntarily move in my chair a certain type of way. And she'd be like, okay, I see that this does this to you. What happened? Like, and she would make me like unpack it. And I'm 100% there for that. But like, how much is like nonverbal cues? How much does that impact the way that you communicate with your clients?
Oh, that is huge. That's why it's so difficult sometimes to be on like virtually with your clients, is because you can't see all of these different movements that they may be doing below the screen, right?
Right.
It really is just going off of the facial expressions. And maybe if you even had sessions with them in person at one point, you kind of know. Like,
yeah, they might have a tick with their hands.
Right.
Or they're shaking their foot.
If they're usually a client that is fidgeting, right, you know when they start to fidgeting, even though you can't really see their hands on the computer screen. So it tells a lot. We do get some training in recognizing, you know, physical nonverbal cues, right? Even like, think about when you're going out on dates with people, right? When someone is leaning in, or if they put their hand on your knee, like that tends to tell you certain messages of, okay, this person is interested in me. This person, you know, may want to do X, Y, and Z with me. Let me confirm and ask them if they want to do X, Y, and Z, right? Because consent is key. So, like, even when we're in our regular lives, we pick up on certain body cues and facial expressions. So, you know, in therapy, we're really looking at it to make sure that we can see if there is maybe some discomfort. Like, if there was, like, a shift in the body, we know that the body, you know, needed to shift in some way. And sometimes it's more of an unconscious thing and not necessarily like a physical thing.
Yeah. Now we're going to shift a little bit because we're talking a lot about the mental health, but you are a certified sex therapist. And, and in your bio, you say there's a lot of exploring of BDSM and kink. And I wanted to ask, like, especially for us Black folks, I've always wondered about BDSM and kink, and like the impact that having been enslaved has on like having these kind of BDSM kinks, because BDSM is bondage, domination, I want to say sadomasochism,
submission, or sadomasochism.
And so how does having come from a lineage of enslaved people and then having these kind of kinks, you know, all of the things, like, how does that impact, you know, the sexuality, BDSM? And then, you know, we have this history, because sometimes I feel like very conflicted about like enjoying certain things and then being like, oh, but slavery though, but you know, police like to lock us up and chain us up, literally. Well, why do we like these things? And I question that, especially when it comes to our community.
Yeah, it's one of those things that can kind of go either way, right? So it can be BDSM and kink can be, in a way, cathartic, in a sense, it's releasing. It's, you know, you're able to release some of those generational traumas that your ancestor has ancestors have experienced that you're now, you know, kind of dealing with, right? It can be a great release and a healing experience for some folks. And other folks, it can trigger them. It's like, nah, you're not beating me with no whip. I might take a, you know, spank on my butt with like something else, but you not a
much
whip,
higher
like,
than that.
And right, or much higher, right? We're not doing that. It can go to that extreme, right? It also, in the more like dominant or top side, some people use it to gain some form of reparations from white people. So they may work directly on, like, only white folks are their submissives, and they get to kind of release some of that in a safe and consensual way, right? Mm-hmm. That is mutually beneficial. Yeah, it can explore so many different elements. It's more about what you want to take into it as well as what you want to take out of it. I always encourage people to read the book, The Color of Kink, and it talks specifically about African-Americans, Black people in, throughout the diaspora, and how kink, you know, has kind of been intertwined into that. So is a great book. I can't remember the author offhand right now, but I recommend that to a lot of folks.
Okay. So on in what, from one perspective, it can be releasing. Right. But it is there anything else? I'm so curious about it because it you know, where a lot of us have a very limited exposure. So people who are not in the BDSM community have a very limited exposure. It will mostly be through pornography and conversations, whether it's informed or uninformed, ignorant or very, like, quote unquote, enlightened conversations about it. How does one become familiar with it in a healthy way? Because you speak about in a safe environment and stuff like that. What does the BDSM community entail? And how can it possibly be safe? A person's being whipped and tied up and hung from the ceiling and all kinds of things. Like, how can it be safe?
It's a thin, that's that thin line between pleasure and pain, right? Mm-hmm. Either way, it can be euphoric for you, or it can be like, nah, we not doing this because this shit hurt, right?
Yeah.
So that can be definitely be a thin line, right? And so we also need to make sure we make the distinction between kink and BDSM, right? Kink is more of the umbrella term that encompasses, you know, so many different elements of sexual play. And it typically is, you know, drawing some pleasure, some sexual pleasure, some sexual arousal from things that are not, you know, what we call, quote unquote, traditional vanilla sex, right? So the basic missionary, penis and vagina, like basic, right?
Okay.
And kink, you know, can be different for everybody, right?
Right.
Because there's levels to this.
Right.
So some people may be on a higher extreme of kinky where they may be engaging in like BDSM practices and things like that, or they could be kind of on the, what we might, depending who you're talking to, consider on the lower end, which is maybe like having their ass smacked during sex, or you know, having like more of a balloon fetish, like while they're engaging with a partner or something like that. And so
a balloon fetish? Sorry, wait, what?
Yes, there are balloon fetishes, just like there's a foot fetish. Like, people enjoy, you know, rubbing feet and getting sexually aroused by a person's foot, or, you know, a heel or something like that. Same thing with balloons. There's probably a fetish for just about everything in the world. Like, so, and it's different, right? So, like, I don't see that as, like, just super out of the ordinary, out of the normal, right? Where somebody else is kind of like, I ain't never heard of that. That is some real kinky shit, right? So it, once again, it also depends on your perspective of what you might consider normal and what you might consider extreme.
Right. Mm-hmm. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Shanta Blue, who is an internationally known speaker and author, also a certified sex therapist from New Jersey. And we've been talking about so many things. But we do have to take a break because, you know, we got to pay some bills, got to pay some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Persuade her with their power. She says that her mind is made. She's got her ticket. I think she's gonna use it. I think she's going to fly away. Persuade her with their power. She says that her mind is made. Why not leave? Why not go away? Hey, too much hatred, corruption, and greed. Give you life, and invariably they leave you with nothing.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and on the air with us this evening, we are speaking to an author, speaker, certified sex therapist from New Jersey, specializes in working with women of color and folks in romantic relationships who are interested in improving their self-esteem, experiencing self-difficulty, sexual difficulties, premarital counseling, and exploring BDSM kink and consensual non-monogamous lifestyles. Shanta Blue, this is our last segment for the evening, but I'm like, I don't want to go yet.
This has been fun.
Yes. So you have written a book for colored girls who need a break when being a superwoman is just too much. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and say you were inspired by For Colored Girls Definitely. When the Rainbow Is Not right. Enough.
Yes. Exactly.
Tell us a little bit about this book. What is it about, and what do you mean when being a superwoman is just too much?
So, you're absolutely right. You know, my inspiration for this was from the play For Colored Girls, one of my favorite plays of all time, because it talked about so many different sexuality-based elements of Black women and what we have to go through to, you know, be considered these strong women in our society. Like, we always have to be strong. We always have to be resilient and, you know, be able to be 10 times better than, like, literally everyone else in order to survive, in order to have the things that we want in life. And so, once again, seeing people I know, working with my clients, and my own, you know, issues that I've had in my own personal life, like, it was exhausting. We recognize that it's super exhausting trying to be this superwoman all the freaking time. Mm-hmm. Like, we're out here saving everybody else except for ourselves.
Because Black women are at the forefront of just about every single kind of protest.
Every single thing.
When it came to Trayvon Martin back in 2012, it was mm-hmm. Black women on the front lines. Mm-hmm. You know, so I can understand that sometimes y'all need a little break. Y'all need to take care of yourselves. Need a little break. Just a little bit.
And so with that, I wanted to create a book that was designed for them to see themselves, as well as to help them prioritize their own self-care. So I created it's an adult coloring book and guided journal, because I'm a mental health practitioner. So mm-hmm. journals are definitely key to me. Like, I encourage folks to write down their thoughts all the time. I also recognize that it could be difficult to just write freehand for some people and just have like a flowing stream of consciousness, like without any prompting. So that's why I wanted that guided journal element in there, where, you know, I ask specific questions about the different ways in which they love. So the love that they have for themselves is first. Then it goes into, you know, questions about the love that you have for your family and friends. We talk about the love we have for romantic partners, as well as love we might have for sexual partners, because those can be different.
Right? Yeah.
We can have some romantic partners that we ain't having sex with, and some sexual partners that we not too romantic with. So
right.
I wanted to make sure there were questions to kind of cover all of that. As well as, like, you know, each section has a whole bunch of different tips on how to manage and navigate those different relationships that you have in your life.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a coloring book / journal that makes you focus on how you love and how mm-hmm. you're caring for not only your partner, but also yourself.
Mm-hmm. And all the images in the book are of women of color, femmes of color as well, right? So it's not, you know, just these skinny stick figures all the time. We have some skinny bodies in there. We have some trans bodies in there. We have some voluptuous thickness in there. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a multitude of different styles and bodies, and I love it. I love the journey. I use it myself all the time still.
Good. So what would you recommend to someone who's maybe having difficulty in their romantic relationships, maybe having difficulty dealing with their own mental health? Like, what would you recommend to them?
Mm-hmm. Big time therapy. I'm huge on therapy, of course, as a therapist, because sometimes you have either tried to talk to, you know, your partners in your life, or tried to kind of do your own healing work, and it may not take you to that next level that really is helping satisfy what is going on in your particular life. So having this third party who is non-partial, right? There's yep. no judgment. They don't have that same investment in your life as maybe like your friends or your partners or your family members may have. Talking to them helps you get a different perspective without, you know, them just caping for you, without always, like, they're just riding for you, right? They're going to call you out on some stuff because, like, that's what you're here for. You're here to kind of gain a new perspective of things.
Yeah. Gaining perspective, so would you say that gaining perspective is an important part of the whole process?
Definitely. Because sometimes, you know, we're looking at something through like this tiny little hole in your own specific lens, you're only seeing like one element of mm-hmm. the particular situation that you're in. Right. And sometimes you need to see the broader picture. Like, so what else may be impacting the situation? Mm-hmm. How else may it impact you? What other consequences, whether they're good or bad consequences, whatever the consequences may there be that possibly you didn't see before?
That, I like that you said that, because a lot of the times when people are focused on themselves and what they went through, I was abused and I went through this and I was that, they don't necessarily see how that abuse that they have experienced is actually filtering through and impacting on their children, their partner or partners, or their work life or anything like that, because mm-hmm. the consequences of having been abused, having not dealt with it, not owning up to it, and like unpacking it and airing out that dirty laundry, as you were saying mm-hmm. earlier, mm-hmm. can sometimes be dire, and mm-hmm. and can really hurt the people that are around them that may just want better for them. You know, so I'm glad mm-hmm. that you said that. Chanta Blue, thank you so much. Please let people know how they can get in touch with you. I mean, you said that there are restrictions, you know, you can't necessarily work with everyone internationally because right. I believe it has to do with your certification and mm-hmm. and because mm-hmm. you're in New Jersey, so that allows you to work with only a certain group of folks. But right. If people, because you don't only do counseling. You do a lot of different things. You're an internationally known speaker, you know, so people can attend your talks. Yeah. You do lives as well, where you discuss mm-hmm. certain topics on your lives. So if someone wants to get in touch with you, please let us know. Let us know how they can get in touch with you.
The best way to get in touch with me is always going to be through my website. So www.bluewellnesscenter.com. So center, C-E-N-T-E-R. That's the best way. You'll see my socials, right? So you can connect with me on social media or on the website. You will see like articles that I have already like been featured in. You can see upcoming workshops and events that we may have. You can purchase the coloring book through the website. You can sign up for our newsletter through the website. So everything that you might need to get in touch with me is going to be on the website.
Well, with that, Chanta Blue, thank you again so much for coming in. If you're just tuning in, I don't know where you've been all night, because this was a really good conversation. It's a really good conversation to have post Valentine's as well, you know, because love continues after Valentine's Day. So don't just let love be a one day thing and then, you know, stop. Keep going. Keep buying gifts and making every day special for your partner. Thank you once again, Chantablu. www.bluewellnesscenter.com, center spelled C-E-N-T-E-R. In case you're just tuning in, you can log on to the website, ckut.ca, and listen to the whole show at 8:31 in our archives. My name has been Kim Dominique Ferguson, and you have been listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Every time I think of you, I always catch my breath, and I'm still standing here, and you're miles away, and I'm wondering why you left, and there's a storm that's raging through my frozen heart tonight. I hear your name in certain circles, me smile. I spend my time thinking about you, and it's almost driving me wild. And there's a heart that's breaking down this long distance line tonight. I ain't missing you at all. Since you've been gone away,
Soca in your 514.
Are you a DJ? Do you love soca music? Production Sounds is giving all Montreal DJs an opportunity to showcase their talent on CKUT 90.3 FM. All you gotta do is submit a 1-hour soca mix to be aired on Soca Sessions late Friday nights. Simply.
Faced with sickle cell anemia, the solution is in our blood. It's a matter of genetics. The more people from the Black communities who give blood, the better our chances to find compatible donors to help those affected by this disease. Faced with sickle cell anemia, we can't leave anyone behind. We have to donate. So don't wait. Book an appointment today at hemequebec.qc.ca, because giving is in our blood.
Productions Nuit d'Afrique and TD Bank Group are proud to present the new faces of Afro Jazz. A special evening of concerts offering us a musical journey to Cuba, Ivory Coast, and Guadeloupe with Deme Arocena, Donald Dogbo, and Tobium. Broadcast live on the Nuit d'Afrique Facebook page Thursday, February 24th at 8 p.m. More info at productionsnudafrique.com.
Listening to the Romanian radio show in Montreal, Marca Ro. Ascultați emisiunea de radio Marca Ro pe 90.3 FM CKUT.